It's Monday afternoon, and you're in tune to KZSU Stanford. And it's time once again for another edition of The Lunch Special. And I got to let you know the views or opinions expressed by the host, DJ, or their guests present on KZSU 90.1 FM Stanford do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Leland Stanford Junior University or its associates. So we thank you for tuning in to this KZSU 90.1 FM broadcast. And here is our first song. Welcome to another edition of The Lunch Special here. I'm your host, Bird, and I'm here, joined again today, like we did last month, by Professor Joel Bainan, Professor of Middle Eastern History here at Stanford. Joel, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Bird. It's great to be here again.
And it's nice to have you. Actually, you know, welcome back. We, you and I were in these studios about 2 days ago.
Yes, we were.
I guess we'll let the cat out of the bag. You're in training, and you're going to end up getting a show here at KZSU playing the kind of music you're playing today.
I very much hope so. That's the idea.
And why don't we speak a little bit about that? Who was that first that you played?
So that was Göksel Kartal. He's a Turkish musician playing a plucked zither, which is called the kanun. known as the king of the instruments in the traditional Turkish and Arabic orchestra. It's a track from The Art of Taksim. Taksim is a musical improvisation, and it's called Nehavent Longa. Nehavent is one of the hundreds of different musical scales or modes, and longa is a quick-paced style of form of the music.
And you've studied this music extensively. You actually went to Egypt and studied it there, didn't you?
I did. I started to play the oud here in the Bay Area with a couple of really fine oudists, one an American, Tom Chandler, and a second Palestinian, Saeed Mohsen. And then when I went over to Egypt to live for 2 years to be the director of Middle East Studies at the American University in Cairo, I continued to take oud lessons, but I got to say, I'm not a talented musician. I love this stuff, but I'm not a talented musician.
Kind of comes down to how much time you put into it, huh?
Yeah.
But we're honored to have you here today, and also there's kind of a theme to your music, because we did this last month, and you had a special theme to it then. But what's the theme today?
So this today I'm going to try to do some introduction to the different instruments that make up the traditional Arabic or Turkish musical ensemble, which is called a taht. And taht means beneath, and the reason for that is that traditionally the musicians are sitting beneath a vocalist. So we're going to do some solely instrumental pieces in the beginning, and then towards the end we'll put some vocalists on as well.
Who's up next?
Up next is Alahiler, which is an album by the Whirling Dervishes from Istanbul. And this is a live recording of them whirling, which is part of their religious ceremony. It's a mystical order founded in the 14th century by Jalaluddin Rumi. And the featured instrument on this track is the nai, or the wood flute, played by Can Gürbal.
All right.
Woo!
Okay, back now at some traditional Middle Eastern flutes from, well, presented here today by my guest, Professor Joel Bainan. And you set that guy up. And that's just another one of the instruments that's in a traditional Middle Eastern ensemble.
That's right. It's traditionally considered the breath of God, the nai, the wood flute. And that's why these Sufi mystics tend to prefer it, and they do their whirling dervish thing very often to that flute. But they use other instruments as well.
Is Middle Eastern music more connected to religion than, say, American music is?
No, not necessarily. That particular piece was, but in fact, a lot of the contemporary religious Puritans wouldn't like much of the kind of music that we're going to hear today, and certainly not the kind of music that I was playing the last time I was on, which was a lot of North African rye, which has got a lot of sexual energy into it. And because of that, Khalid, the king of rye, had a contract put out on him and had to leave Algeria and go to Paris, where he now lives and works.
Really? Just because of music he made?
Well, it was too sexy. It was like you couldn't show Elvis's hips on the Ed Sullivan show, right?
Yeah, but they wouldn't have put a contract on him. That's wild stuff. I didn't know that. I learn something new every time I come down here. Who's up next, Joel?
Okay, the next instrument is the violin, which is, of course, a Western instrument, but in the 19th and early 20th century, it was integrated into the traditional Arabic orchestra. And this is Jihad Akel, a Lebanese performer. And this piece is called Kamanja, or Violin Cocktail.
بصوت الكمانجة ألا تسمع ألا تطرب بصوت الكمانجة ألا تسمع ألا تطرب بصوت الكمانجة ألا تسمع ألا تطرب بصوت الكمانجة
فليس من راح عنا فليس من راح عنا راح عنا
كمانجة
راح عنا
Thank you.
هذا وقال البعض إن الدرب
Starting to jump here on Monday afternoon on the lunch special with your get with our guest today, Professor Joel Bainan, Professor of Middle Eastern History, and learning about all the instruments in the Middle Eastern combos, quartets. Are there orchestras too?
There are large orchestras too. For example, Umm Kulthum, the diva of 20th century Arabic song, used to play with 25, 30 pieces behind her, but the traditional way is with about five pieces and some percussion. So now we're going to hear Ali Jihad Rassi and Simon Shaheen on a more traditional mode, stringed instruments. Simon Shaheen is going to play the oud and Ali Jihad Rassi the bouzouk. The way to tell them apart is the oud has a higher pitch. And this tune is called Maqam Bayati, and Bayati is again one of the several hundred different musical modes. They work very differently than the Western 12-tone scale because there can be a almost infinite number of quarter and half tone combinations, and that's one of the reasons that the violin is so adaptable, because you can put your finger down wherever and get the quarter tone, which you couldn't do, for example, on a guitar. So this is Ali Jihad Rassi and Simon Shaheen, Maqam Bayati. Thank you.
some relaxing Middle Eastern music for your listening pleasure on this Monday afternoon here with Professor Joel Bainan. And Professor Bainan's going to stay over in the next hour. We're going to shift gears and talk about current events around the world, especially in the Middle East, because that's his area of expertise. And usually about now, Professor, I'll get into a small conversation. Now, we've talked before, but I never asked you about your, for lack of a better word, writing career. And I hadn't thought about it, but you have several books out, don't you?
I do. I don't write about music very much, though.
You write about what you teach, Middle Eastern history?
I write about labor history. I write about the history of the left in the Middle East, especially in Egypt. I write about the Arab-Israeli conflict. That one tends to get me into some trouble. The last book that I edited with my former student, Rebecca Stein, is called The Struggle for Sovereignty, Palestine and Israel, 1993 to 2005. So that's a kind of almost current events type take on things. Some people like it, some people don't.
And have you ever written any novels, any nonfiction?
I would love to write a novel. And that's it's on my agenda, and I don't know if I can do it.
Does it take longer?
Well, for me, it certainly would take longer because I've never done it before, and it's a different mode, a different style than writing an academic books. I mean, once you get into the swing of it, academic books are not that difficult if you've got the training and if you have access to good material. You know, I can knock those things out relatively quickly now.
Mm-hmm.
A novel, it's like, oh, I got to start all thinking about this all over from scratch.
Yeah, I would imagine it'd be a daunting task for sure, or it could be.
I'd love to do it, though. I'm just afraid I don't have the talent for it.
I hear you. And you have a brand new book coming out in what, you said, a couple of weeks?
I do. It is called The Struggle for Worker Rights in Egypt. So that's one of the big things that I do is labor history of Egypt. It's going to be published by the Solidarity Center in Washington, D.C. That's the international advocacy body for the American Federation of Labor Congress of Industrial Organizations, AFL-CIO. And I will be going out to Washington, D.C., President's Day weekend for a public launch of it, which I believe is Wednesday, February 17th.
Oh, not too far away. Well, let's. What we'll do is we'll try to touch on more of that part of your life in the next hour between 1 and 2 on Shedding Light. And in the meantime, let's get back to something. We want to thank the caller that called in.
Oh, yes. We had a call from a caller, so thank you very much, who mentioned that you can get any tone you like on a guitar by bending the strings, which sounds right to me, although I've played guitar and I can't do it. So, next piece. The one we just heard was a duet of Ali Jihad Rassi and Simon Shaheen on the oud. This one is from Simon Shaheen's collection, Turath, or Heritage, the Masterworks of the Middle East. And here is the whole Arabic orchestra playing together. The tune is Longa Farahfaza. Again, Farahfaza, one of the many Arabic modes, and Longa, a very upbeat style or form. And the composer of this Longa is the legendary Riyad Assombati, an Egyptian who, if there was something like blues in Egypt, he would be the Egyptian blues player. Hard life, hard drinking, brilliant artist, never got credit for it until the very end of his life. Others who were less talented were much more front and center. So this is one of the classic pieces of the modern repertoire of Egyptian Arabic music.
Here it is.
Thank you.
So that was the traditional Middle Eastern orchestra. Is that
Yes, that's right. It's called the Tacht.
And that would be the name for the traditional. Now, does that go throughout several different countries, or is that primarily based in one or two? Or
well, this was an Egyptian tune. This style of music would be played throughout the Eastern Mediterranean, in the Arab countries, and in Turkey as well. The Ottoman Empire, Turks ruled the Arab world for 400 years, so there's lots of influence.
Turks aren't Arabs?
No, Turks are not Arabs. They would have a heart attack if you thought so. And North Africa has some of the same instruments, but a completely different repertoire. Somebody might play that piece in North Africa because it's very, very well known, but it's not something that comes out of the local culture.
Being as busy as you are, a professor, you've been here at Stanford 27 years, how did you find the time to learn all the, well, I guess it's just one of your loves, so you just, talk a little bit about that process, because you've got a deep knowledge of this music, and it's a real, it's not just one country or one style, you know, you seem to know the entire breadth of this, this Middle Eastern thing.
Well, I'll tell you, there are lots of people who know more than I do, but I liked it for a long time. I played guitar as a teenager. So I had some musical background, but the instrument that I really eventually fell in love with is the oud, which is super difficult instrument because there's no frets and you have to have a really good ear to hear the quarter tones. But I didn't know how to play it at all. And, the late Hamza Adin, a Nubian oud player and singer from the southern regions of Egypt, which is called Nubia, was sick in the hospital. And I knew someone who was taking care of him. And this wasn't supposed to happen because it's a breach of confidentiality. But I said, well, could you ask him? Could he recommend someone to teach me the oud? And he did. And so my first oud teacher was Tom Chandler, who was Hamza Adin's student. And Tom is still active. He plays around the Bay Area. And he's also got an American ensemble, because he plays the guitar as well. And they're called the Palm Wine Boys. So I started to go up to the East Bay every Friday afternoon to take lessons from him. And after I did that for about a year, I went to Egypt, and Hamza Adin's nephew, totally by chance, was my teacher there. I mean, I just met somebody, a publisher, a book publisher who specialized in Nubian literature that I know. It's written in Arabic, but it's got this strong southern regional influence, something like Faulkner in the United States. And I said, oh, you know, I'm looking for an oud teacher. Do you know anybody? And he said, oh, yeah, well, Hamza Adin's nephew, Karim Murad, is my friend. Come by next week and I'll bring him to you. And so he was my teacher in Egypt.
That must have blown your mind when that happened,
huh? It really was, because Hamza Adin, bless his soul, was an enormously beautiful human being. He passed away. He had a certain quiet spirituality about him, a way of just being in the world that radiated a combination of calm and confidence. And he's a great artist, too. I mean, he's not the most technically brilliant oud player. But the combination of his voice and the oud playing and broad range, because he's played with the Kronos Quartet and he's played with Japanese instruments and he's headlined at the Village Vanguard in Greenwich Village. That's how he sort of made his name in the United States in the 60s and 70s. So I feel really privileged to have known him and to really gotten a big push on this journey as a result of meeting him.
Is he not with us anymore?
Yeah, he passed away, I would say, 3 years ago. He had a stroke. He had liver disease. He had diabetes. He was very ill at the end. Although even after the stroke, he came back and performed. I saw him live maybe 2 years after the stroke. You could barely tell the difference.
Hmm. Very interesting. Professor Joel Bainin's the guest, and he'll stay with us through the next hour or two, and we'll get into a little current events about the Middle East. But right now, featuring some more music from Middle Eastern orchestras.
So here is Nasir Shama, an Iraqi, who I think is the most technically brilliant oud player performing in the Arab world today. Nasir Shama grew up in Iraq, went to the Baghdad Musical Conservatory, deeply steeped in the traditional Iraqi repertoire, left Iraq after the first Iraq War in 1991, moved to Egypt, where he has established the House of the Arab Oud, an enormous teaching apparatus, and he's really deep into the history of the instrument, which is that it was an ancient Sumerian instrument, and the Arabs, when they conquered the Middle East and North Africa and into Spain, brought it to Spain, and there the oud became the precursor of the lute and the flamenco guitar. So he's traced out all of this history, and he's got pieces that are showing the influences of this and of that. This is the headline piece from his album Ishraq, which means illumination, and the piece itself is called Ishraq. So this is Nasir Shama solo oud. Thank you.
And that was Oud, correct, Joel Bainan?
That's right. That was Nasir Shama, Iraqi Oud player who's been living in Egypt for the last 20 years or so.
And I'm not familiar with that instrument too much. We were talking off mic, and I guess Ouds can be, they're kind of like a guitar. What it's five or six strings, and they're double or single?
Five or six courses. If you've got, you can have six courses doubled, or you can have five courses doubled and a deep bass drone single. And there are rarely seven-coursed doubled, but I've never seen that in performance.
Hmm. And you've probably seen a lot of a lot of folks playing oud.
Especially when I was living in Egypt, yeah. I mean, there's lots of stuff, and there are lots of occasions when it's free, and even when it's not free, it's, you know, $2-3 for a ticket, so you can go as much as you want.
Hmm. Very cool. Is it performed here very much?
Yes. Well, not very much, but it is performed. My former teacher, Tom Chandler, plays around. Another former teacher of mine, Saeed Mohsin, plays around. There is a group called Zawaya, which means aspects in Arabic. That's a community musical group. I just saw them perform in a free concert at the De Young Museum in conjunction with the Tutankhamun exhibit. That's the ancient Egyptian mummy and all of his accoutrements, Egyptian pharaoh, that's at the De Young, I think, through March. And as part of the associated artistic and cultural events, the Zawaya group put on a concert. They have a chorus, Aswat, which means voices, and they have a musical ensemble as well. And there are some others. In fact, every summer in Northern California near Mendocino, there is a Middle East music camp. So everybody from this region and even far beyond gathers up there for 2 weeks of teaching and learning and performing and all sorts of cool things. So there is definitely a community of these folks around here, but of course they don't get as much play and airtime as people who are playing various forms of American or European music.
Although that kind of music is probably more represented here in the Bay Area than it is in most parts of the United States, right?
I think so. The only other place in the United States that I'm aware of where there is a fair amount of this music is New York. There is a big Arab community in New York. Brooklyn is the historic center of it. The largest Arabic music distribution company in the United States. Rashid Music is in Brooklyn, so there's a scene in New York too.
What do we got up next, Joe?
Okay, so I mentioned that the North African repertoire is different than the Eastern Mediterranean repertoire. So here is a Tunisian oud player, Anwar Brahim, from his album Barzakh, playing Raf Raf. And this is representative of the new stuff. That is, he's playing the oud, but you can see a lot of jazz influences in this piece as well. So here we go with Anwar Brahim.
And actually, we've pretty much run out of time. This will probably be our last song. If folks wanted to find out more about your work, either here at Stanford or your work in this music, how could they do that?
You can email me at beinin@stanford.edu. That's B-E-I-N-I-N. You can also look for the website of Zawaya. That's Zawaya.org, I believe it is. Saeed Mohsin also has a website. His name is a little bit tough to spell, so email me if you want to find out about that. He's a really good oud player. I mean, he's a really brilliant player. He's actually Simon Shaheen's student, who we heard just a couple of tracks ago.
And you're going to stay through the next hour, and just to give folks a little taste, a little foretaste of what they can hear if they stay tuned, what are we going to be talking about?
I think we'd talk about the settler expansion in East Jerusalem. I was recently in Palestine in Israel, and just the other day sent off an article about what the Jewish settlers are up to in East Jerusalem, so we can start out talking about that if you like.
Sure. And anything else you'd like to talk about, too. And our mutual friend, Paul George, is going to be doing a concert for Haiti, and we can talk a little bit about that, too.
Okay.
All right. So, once again, this is the last tune, and who are we going out with?
Anwar Brahim.
All right. We'll be right back.
Thank you.